Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
Bobby Bandalis.
It was lovely, wasn't it? Great story.
Yes.
Love it.
Yes.
And another, you know, how many of all these episodes have we got where there's a adversity and there's a challenge that you have to overcome?
Resilience.
If it was the thing you ticked across, I would say virtually everyone, wouldn't you? That there's something, whatever it might be.
It's a definite thread.
Big, small,
it's a definite
whatever.
Thread
there's
coming
definitely
through.
Definitely resilience.
And that story that people will hear when they listen to the episode about the premises that he uses for his dental practice.
Mm.
You know, we talked about the power of storytelling, but my goodness, he's got a good story to tell about the premises
it's a
that
lovely
he uses
legacy
to practice.
Be, isn't legacy, it? Isn't it? So
yeah.
It was brilliant. I love the way he has approached things. His life has been interesting and some challenges, and that he also is giving back. You know, he's helping other people.
Yeah, cracking episode.
It was brilliant.
So a chilly winter's day, but another podcast to record.
We'll warm us up with the entertainment and the lovely discussion we are going to have.
Absolutely, absolutely. So today we're very fortunate. We have Dr. Bobby Bandal joining us, and Bobby is a dentist, founder of the Avenue Dental Practice in Leamington Spa. And if you haven't seen the pictures on the website, you should definitely get there. It's a stunning looking place.
Hats off.
And also a supporter of future practice owners, which I think is a really nice thing to do, and from someone that's walked in their shoes.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'll be interested to find out about that.
Give the truth.
Exactly. Welcome, Bobby. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Yeah, thank you guys for having me on. How are you?
Pleasure. We're good. Thank you for making the time. You're not short of things to keep you busy. Yeah. So
carve that your busy day to chat to two old duffers.
Exactly.
Well, maybe one old duffer and one sort of younger duffer. Anyway.
Yeah, can you be a younger duffer? I'll take younger duffer. So before we get to teeth ownership and squats, which is kind of what's dominated a lot of your world to start with, can we just kind of roll back the years and what was your childhood like? And were you always destined to be a dentist from the early days?
Yeah, so I mean, I had a great childhood, to be honest with you. I'm really loving supporting mum and dad. Grew up really close with our family, my grandparents. From a really working class background, quite poor when we were very young. Dad only came over from India when he was 14. And historically, they were pretty much factory workers. So there was nobody professional or medical qualified in my family whatsoever. But my parents worked really, really hard. And they ended up going into business. They had fish and chip shop and then news agents. And then that spiraled out into property investments and whatnot. And ended up becoming quite successful. It's a great story in itself. We had a good childhood. I can't complain.
I love it when I hear those entrepreneurial stories.
It's brilliant, isn't
where
it?
People kind of come over and, you know, you say your parents came over and didn't have much and factory work, and then boom, it's like fish and chip shop, you know, had another shop, got some property. And I think it's inspiring for anybody who's just starting out or possibly even having tough times. You can see that pathway of how people can start from one place and over a period of time can end up somewhere completely different.
And no doubt sacrifices along the way.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I remember when we first, well, my mum always houses actually, when they bought their first house, we had no furniture. We were sleeping on the floor. Like,
wow.
That's how it used to be back in the day.
Yeah. Nowadays, that'd probably be child abuse. I mean, I don't know is the honest answer, but, you know, people would say, well, I can't believe you. You haven't got a mattress and whatever. You haven't got a bed.
Yeah,
it's interesting how times change, isn't it?
It is.
I want to look back now. It's probably where the work ethic comes from. You know, just seeing that. You know, growing up, then you know you don't really know any different.
You just see
your parents working hard, and then that rubs off on you.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Before we kind of leave your school years, we were talking before, and you were saying in your teens, you were a big lad. You were over 20 stone, you said, and you lost 8 stone before you went to university. I'm fascinated. What was the trigger to start that transformation? Because
I was huge. I mean, from probably about the age of about 6, 7 upwards, my weight just spiraled and spiraled until I was about 18. And then, I think I peaked at probably about 22 stone, about 48 inch waist, something like
right.
that.
Wow.
It was incredible. The real trigger, to be honest with you, this will make you laugh, is that when I actually got my place at university, that was a point where I thought, actually, I'm going to be like meeting girls now.
There we go. Yeah. We got the truth.
And then that was like, yeah, I hope my wife doesn't listen to this. But but yeah, that was the point where I thought, oh no, yeah, I've got to do something now. And that's when I really put my head down, started exercising, and really sorting myself out.
That's great. That's just the truthful honesty of Bobby, isn't it? You know, no, actually, it's basically women. I didn't want to get fit. I thought to myself, actually, no, I'm, yeah, brilliant. That's right. That's great. Thank you for your honesty there.
And so you did that. You were going to get your place to uni, but before you got there, it was a bit of a stumble through your AS and A levels, wasn't it? It wasn't plain sailing for you. You weren't somebody who did GCSEs, A levels, applied to dental school, got your place, got in. You had to work hard for that, didn't you? Even to the point where you wrote a letter to the admissions officer at Birmingham, didn't you? Kind of, you know, pleading your case to secure your spot at dental school.
Yeah, my school years were really troublesome. I was a very, very naughty school child. My dad ended up moving me for GCSEs to private school.
Oh, really?
Because I got into a lot of trouble in year 10, year 9. Yeah, I was got into fights and all sorts. And dad gave me a real kick up the backside and then moved me schools. And that school was great, but then I still didn't really do very well in my AS level. I actually failed my AS levels, pretty much all of them. But then that was when I really saw the light, and the second year I fixed up and I got straight A's. And then that's when I decided to, you know, do dentistry, but I didn't get in. So the first time I applied, I got rejected from all universities. I had two interviews and I failed them. Teachers really pushed me then. They were like, go and do biomed or do something else. And I said, no, let's just take a year out. I had a job. So I thought, let's, you know, really try and nail it and get back into dentistry. And then the second time round, I got rejected outright from all universities, even though I had straight A's. So I didn't even get any interviews.
Oh, that's interesting.
Did you know why that was?
No idea. Well, I know it's extremely competitive.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't know. But then at that point, I thought, let's just give it one last shot. So I wrote a letter to the admissions tutor at University of Birmingham, just pleading my case, and, you know, just telling them all the reasons why they should let me in. And about a month later, he wrote back to me and said, you know, we appreciate your proactive approach and we'd like to give you an interview. I was shocked. I genuinely did not think that was going to happen. I had my interview, they let me in.
Did you think, I'm going to write a letter? And then did you craft it and off you went?
Yeah, well, it was me. My parents pushed me as well. They were like, see what else you can do.
That's brilliant, isn't it? I love stuff like that. Love it, because it would have been so easy to take it and go, then moan about it.
But also thinking back to your parents' past, they didn't have it easy. Things didn't get put in their lap. So I wonder whether there was kind of a little bit of a message from them, which is, look, you know, we came to the UK with not a lot and had jobs, we got a business and we got another business. And so things just don't fall in your lap. So if you want something,
you've got to
grab it by the neck and make sure that it's yours. So I wonder whether their own experience actually helped you, because it could have been a near miss. If you hadn't have done that, you could have easily just said, well, it didn't happen. And you'd have never come into dentistry.
Yeah, definitely. If I just sat back and thought, you know, that's it, you know, I wouldn't be sat here right now with you guys having this wonderful chat.
Which is interesting because as our conversation goes on, there'll be other things in there which shows that you don't sit back.
Yes.
It's fascinating, isn't it, from like an early age?
Yeah, yes. So then you went off to Birmingham Dental School, graduated in 2013.
Parted.
10 years a dentist this year. Which is good news. Were they the best few years of your life?
They were the best and the worst.
Tell us why they were the best. Tell us why they were the best first.
Well, uni life was incredible. It was really good fun. But I probably had too much fun.
Is that possible?
I mean, when you look back now, it's hard to imagine, you know, what the lifestyle was like back then. You know, life's so different. You know, I'd give anything to go back and live those 5 years again. Do it even better. But uni was good fun. I can't complain. But in terms of dentistry, the academic side, I hated it. I hated dentistry.
Really?
With a passion. Yeah, I did not enjoy it whatsoever. You know, Birmingham was notoriously, you know, pretty tough. Mm. It was very, very heavy on exams. Mm. It's fine. I never failed any of the exams, except for part of the clinical stuff. But it was fine. I got through in the end. But I just didn't enjoy the clinics. Mm. You know, just didn't click with me whatsoever. It was only after I left dental school, you know, really starting to enjoy it when I actually got into practice.
Mm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting hearing you say, you know, you didn't fail exams, you got through, which is kind of in stark contrast to your AS levels and your A levels. So clearly you'd grown up. And I think as three blokes talking, we tend to be fairly late developers compared to ladies in terms of our maturity. And it might just be that when you were like 16, 17, 18, you just didn't kind of knuckle down to the extent you did a few years later when you were at dental school. Because clearly the ability's in there. Mm. It was just the focus, wasn't it?
Hormones. Hormones, that's what it is.
Exactly. Yeah, at a younger age, it was just pure laziness.
Yeah, yeah.
But then by the time you get to university, you've learned how to study.
Yes.
And learned how to pass exams.
Yeah, yeah. And then you qualify and you're an associate at a practice for around about 8 years, developing a special interest in implants. And you say that you had a really supportive mentor at that practice, which is great to hear, because I think that mentors in life generally are great things. And once you've had a mentor, you realise how it gives you that kind of
benefit,
broader interest and someone to lean on and get advice and guidance from. But you then moved on from that practice, didn't you? What happened in that situation?
Yeah, so the principal of that practice was incredible. You know, I'd worked in a couple of practices prior to that, but didn't stick in any of them because I didn't get on with any of the principals. But this place was just so different. Mm. His approach of how he looked after all the associates was just, you know, nothing I'd ever seen before. You know, he's the kind of person, you can go to him about anything. It wasn't just dentistry, you know, life, whatever it was. You know, he was there, he would listen. You could knock on his door any time of the day and he would have time for you. You know, he'd never fob you off. But that rubbed off into everything, you know, and he put a lot back into us clinically. And then he put a lot back into us in actually teaching us how a business runs as well and how a practice runs, you know, which was really important. Yeah, that's probably pivotal. It's one of the reasons why I've been able to do what I do now.
Mm. Oh, wow. So it wasn't just the clinical side of things. He was bringing you in on understanding how to run a business too.
Yeah, he was a great businessman. You know, he was quite open. He would share most things. And you know, just seeing what he did and you know what he did with his team,
yeah,
and just seeing how he was with the team, you know, just watching what he did over those, you know, 7 or 8 years that we were there, you know, was enough to rub off onto you, you know, to know how to run a successful practice.
Yeah. And that's
brilliant.
That kind of really nice positive story then twists, doesn't it? Because you then got really disenfranchised with dentistry and considered leaving the profession.
Yeah, well, he decided to exit then at some point. Mm. So he ended up selling it to a bigger company. And that's when it really fell to pieces. So there was no leader in the team anymore. Right. There was nobody there at the top. There was, you know, all of that had gone. So it was almost like the glue that held everything together just vanished overnight. And you know, that brewed a lot of discontent and things just changed, you know, after that with the bigger company. It just felt like you weren't cared for. Mm. You know, it was that there was no interest in us anymore as people, as humans, and interest in what we do, the work that we do, and you know, our patients. And you know, as cliche as it sounds, it all became about the money.
So you're just a number.
But that leadership, that on the ground leadership, is really important. And this isn't bashing corporates at all, but I think that that's where independent dental practices will always be better than a corporate practice, because invariably the person who owns it and runs in it, they're there, they're living it, they're breathing it, they're reinforcing the culture.
They've got an interest in it.
Yeah, all the time. And I think, you know, different corporates are, you know, some are better than others at that. But I think it's a very difficult area for them to really compete, because as you've described, once it's gone, it's not there. And we all know what makes us feel good. And it's not necessarily the things people say. It's an environment. And if it's a positive environment to be in, it feels good to be there. And what you just described was an environment that it didn't feel good to be there.
Yeah, I mean, it was the kind of place where, this is the best way I could describe it, if it stayed as it was the kind of place where all the associates never want to leave.
Yeah. Mm.
yeah, you know, you're quite happy. You just come in, you do your work. Everybody has a good time. Everybody gets paid and it's great. Life's good.
Yeah.
And then it went to the complete opposite where you wake up in the morning and it's like, I don't want to go in anymore.
So what happened? Did you leave and go and work at another practice, or did you take some time away from dentistry?
Yeah, no, I mean, I got to a point where one day I just walked in and I saw my list. My list was pretty stable and I had about 30 checkups in, and I was just doing the odd implant here and there. And I just looked at it and I just thought, I can't do this anymore. Mm. You know, like, enough is enough. You know, I could tell with my own mental health that if I stayed doing that, just the same thing over and over and over, and, you know, in the unhappy environment, you know, I started to recognize for myself that it's not good for me. Mm. And
it's good to have the self-awareness to see that in yourself. Yeah,
that self-awareness is so important. You know, I think a lot of dentists sometimes get too busy to even recognize self-awareness.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, they're just stuck in surgery all day, and you know, you focus on the clinical and you don't actually understand, you know, how unhappy you might be. So yeah, I just handed my notice in and I just decided to leave.
Bobby, how long would you say you were unhappy for before you made that decision? Was it something that you really kind of struggled with, or were you able to get to that decision quite quickly?
No, it brewed within me. Right. I'd say for probably about 6 months.
Fair while.
Yeah, it's kind of like a volcano. It builds up and builds up, and then you get to a point where, yeah,
it's going to erupt. Yeah.
Yeah.
You slammed your drill down and went, I'm off.
Yeah. And it's better to take yourself out of that situation before
definitely. You
know, something bad happens. Mm. But now, in hindsight, you know, it was the best decision I ever made. But as you said, I was really, really unhappy just with dentistry on the whole at that point. So I thought, you know, let's try something else. So I dabbled in, you know, property, doing a few other bits and bobs. But it didn't really float my boat.
Right.
It was actually pretty boring and pretty slow and not as glamorous as, you know, what it's made out to be. So I thought, no, I can't do this forever. So, you know, I actually missed then the actual seeing of patients.
Right.
With care, you know, doing good quality work, building relationships. So that's what I thought. No, dentistry is definitely right, but then I just got to figure out exactly what in dentistry I want to do. And I didn't really want to work for anybody else then at that point. At that point, it was clear if I'm going to go back, it's either buying a practice or setting something.
So how was this, like, early 30s? Would that be about right, or mid 30s?
Yeah, about 30.
So you say the choice was to buy a practice or set a practice up. Did you start with looking for a practice, couldn't find what you wanted, so then you went to a squat, or was the dream always to have a squat?
No. The dream wasn't always to have a squat. So I did look at practices, but for me, my criteria was really narrow. But, you know, my family's all set here, my kids, my home. So I didn't really want to be traveling out all over the place. And all the practices that I looked at here were just too expensive.
Yep.
It was just far too out of my reach. You know, everything was, you know, looking at well over £1 million plus. A lot of the practices that I looked at, there wasn't really scope to add value, you know, do much more with them. They were pretty much maxed out. So it's not something that I wanted to get into. So that's what brought me back to the squat. And then my old principal, the mentor that I had in that practice, he actually set up another squat after he exited that business, and I went to see him.
Right.
And that practice, stunning, well, still is.
Yeah.
When I went to see that and see him there, then it was like, yeah, the squat is sealed.
I can do it for less than £1 million.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you then set about, I assume, sketching out your business plan, doing some financial forecasting, perhaps speaking to your mentor. How long did that process, was that kind of planning process before you then said, right, I now need to get myself a location?
Yeah, so that took about, I made the decision pretty much instantaneously, and then I just went straight into it. So in the background, I started writing business plan, getting things into place, building. I was quite fortunate, so I've actually used a building that was already owned within the family, and it was in a great spot, but their lease was coming up for renewal. So I actually used to live in this building when I was a kid. My mum and dad ran a business in the same building downstairs. Yeah, 20 years ago, it was a news agent.
Oh, what a lovely turn in the story.
Yeah, that's quite sweet, isn't it? It's like a return.
Exactly. I mean, even some of the patients we see now, still remember it and still remember me.
No. From when
we used to be. Wow.
because it's a really nice community town. You know, everybody knows everyone.
Yeah.
And patients love the story. They love the story. They love seeing what we've done with the building. So I took the lease back off of the people. Their lease was coming up to an end, so I took the building back. But it needed a hell of a lot of work doing to it. So we planned a double-story extension. Wow. We built some flats upstairs. And then we took all the ground floor, and I used all that as the practice. So that whole process going through planning took a hell of a long time. So we were looking about a year overall, because it hit during that COVID time. Yeah, councils were backlogged with a ton of work.
Yeah.
Not just change of use, by the sounds of things. Obviously, all those other things you were doing as well.
Yeah, the works.
Yeah, well, planning was a nightmare. So we got right to the end of planning permission, and I had an email from the planning officer to say that it's all been approved and we're going to look at signing it off in the next couple of weeks. And then a week later, I had an email from the council saying, your planning officer has now left the council. She doesn't work here. And the new planning officer has taken over the case, dislikes all of it. And we want to reject your application and resubmit. And I had to fight them to not let that happen, because it would have gone back to the bottom of the pile.
But isn't it remarkable that you have kind of policy guidelines that you'd have thought local authorities would follow? So either it falls within or without. It's not a personal judgment about whether I like it or not. Their job is to apply the policy, surely.
You would think that, but in my experience, there is just no consistency whatsoever. Yeah. No.
But then also, this does loop us back again, doesn't it, to that resilience, you know. Yeah.
Writing the letter to the admissions officer.
Exactly, you know, appealing your case and make sure that you kind of, you know, got it through, but in a forceful way, but in a way which is kind of encouraging to make sure that you get the right end result.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, that didn't end there. That carried on all the way through the build. It was a bloody nightmare.
Oh, really?
Like you give me a problem and I can tell you we had it.
Right.
You know, we had builders who we had to ask to leave, who were committing fraud.
Oh, nice.
So one set of builders were charging VAT and they weren't VAT registered. Fortunately, we hadn't overpaid at that point, so we didn't lose out, but it was still obviously a nightmare. Yeah. We had a very nasty neighbour who reported us to HSE, and we got inspected multiple times. There was loads. I mean, I could go on all day about all the issues and the problems.
Wow! And this is before you've even put the sign over the door, the door, and greeted your first patient.
Have you still got that neighbour there?
No.
Oh, they've gone.
The funny thing is, She was selling the house. She was already in the process of leaving, but she just made her life a nightmare.
God, people like that you don't need, do you?
Yeah, some people just, no
So
words.
Rolling forward to more positive times, you've now been seeing patients for nearly a year. How's it going? How have you been received in the local town?
Yeah, practice going great. Practice going great. Yeah, it's growing really nicely. We've expanded the team. We're expanding again in January. Mm-hmm. So we've got new dentist starting, second surgery, getting ready to go in. It's just going from strength to strength.
And you're enjoying it, by the sounds of things.
Yeah, absolutely love it. Absolutely.
And
love
I assume fully private, broad range of dental services for your patients?
Yeah, fully private. We do everything in-house pretty much at the moment, apart from fixed orthodontics. But that's something we're going to branch into next year.
Right. And do you get to do many? Is implants sort of like your preferred? And do you get to do many of them or sort of like spend time on the others?
Yeah, so at the moment I do a bit of everything. So we do cosmetic, restorative. Right. I do all the implants. We've got an oral surgeon who comes into sedation, surgery for us as well. We have a therapist in with us as well. So she does a lot of our simple restorative work, perio. And going forwards, it's just a matter of branching out the team. So everybody's got their own little niches and everybody can do a bit of what they want.
It has to work like clockwork, though, with only one chair. To make sure everyone's in the right
efficient
place at the
processes.
Right time.
Yeah.
Very, very impressive, yeah.
Do you work anywhere else, Bobby?
Yeah, so I still go out and place implants mainly one of the practice. Right. So I do that once a month.
I mean, that's not unusual. Quite often when people start a squat, and you might do that for kind of clinical fulfillment reasons, and you get to deliver your implants there. Mm. But quite often when people start squats, they will maintain an associate position for 1 or 2 days a week somewhere else whilst they develop their own patient base.
Yeah, 100%. It's a great idea. Yeah, helps keep your cash flow coming through. You know, whatever you can earn as an associate, you know, for me, it pretty much paid my wage bill. So, you know, whatever money that was coming in, it covers some of your costs. Yeah. Now I don't need to do it, but I do it because exactly like you said, I like doing it. And in my practice at the moment, we're not at a point where I can just sit there all day just doing implant work. So it keeps my clinical skills up.
Yeah.
You know, doing that.
We get to meet lots of dentists too who have an ambition to open a squat dental practice, and many of them aren't dissimilar to you. So in another life, we own and run Frank Taylor and Associates, and they sell dental practices. We sell dental practices, and lots of people have an ambition. You know, I want to practice like this, and they have a shopping list of, you know, 7 or 8 things they want, and it's hard to get above 2 or 3 ticks on that sheet of paper, as perhaps you found yourself. So lots of people find themselves in that situation where they say, well, yeah, perhaps I'll open my own squat dental practice. You've been through this, and you've got the battle scars of the process. What would you say are the key non-clinical traits you need if you're going to embark on a journey of setting up a squat dental practice? What's important?
Yeah, I think the first thing is kind of like what we've touched along this whole conversation is resilience. You know, when you're going to go down this journey, you've got to have a certain amount of mental toughness because it's not easy. It's not easy whatsoever. You know, you'll come across difficulties all the way. So you've got to be able to psychologically be able to handle all that without breaking down. You know, that's something that it's almost hard to learn that either. You know, you have to go through a certain amount of life experience to build that up. So if your life's been easy kind of all the way up to where you are now, you know, it might be difficult for you when all of a sudden you're about to go down this journey and you start running into a whole load of issues and problems that you have no idea, you know, how to deal with them and manage them. But it's definitely one of the biggest things.
I think you're right, because I think it is a lived experience. You can't read a book on resilience,
no,
can you? And suddenly, oh, yeah, that's what it's like. You know, thinking through your journey, you know, at school and at dental school and your parents and, you know, the building works. You've had layers of the onion of experience, you know, layered on you.
Who was the person we spoke to? And it was interesting. They were a dentist. I can't remember. It might have been Victoria. I can't honestly remember. But she set up a business and she said, people don't tell you things like, how many tubes of this do I need to order? How many handpieces? How many mirrors? How many? She said, you know, there's lots of people that will teach you about, you know, setting up a practice and choosing the building and type of equipment. But I'm sure, I can't remember who it was. And they said, but nobody teaches you actually how to run a practice. It's a bit like you've done all your hard work, you open the doors and it's like, bloody hell.
Yeah, I had a dentist actually ask me yesterday, I don't know how to interview and I don't know where to do these interviews, and you know, I've got people lined up but I have no idea what the hell I'm doing or what I'm looking for. And you're not taught that.
So sorry, Bobby, you were saying you said resilience was number one, and then you were saying and the second.
Yeah, the second thing is you've got to learn about business. that, you know, you cannot, you know, most dentists don't know anything about business other than we go to work, and on the whole, we generally earn a good living, you know, at the end of a month. But you actually have to understand how to run a business, you know, to some extent, or some business concepts. You know, that's something that you can learn about. So, you know, you can go on YouTube, you can read books, you know, wherever you go to principals that have done it before, get mentors. But, you know, you've got to have an understanding of, you know, how dental practices run and operate, you know, from a business perspective.
I think you were really lucky having the mentor you did those 8 years at a practice, you know, not only on the implant side of things, but that principle exposing you to some of the fundamentals of business is gold, because I think it's really unusual to get that. And you're right, I think dentists tend to, if they do any learning, it tends to be clinical. They tend not to kind of, you know, build their business skills. Had you obviously able to draw on that experience from your principal, since then have you invested in yourself more to develop your own business skills?
Yeah, a massive amount. Yeah, I've invested a huge amount into personal development. You know, what people don't realize is your business, whatever you do, it's all on you. So the better you can become as a person, you know, all around in life in general, you know, not even just, you know, business, but the better that you can become as a person, the better your business will be. And that all starts with investment into yourself. So, you know, whatever that is, coaches, you know, mentors, going on different courses. You know, I did a few different courses, you know, learning about business, you know, before I set the practice up, learning how dental practices run, operate. You know, read a lot of books around the topics as well. But the biggest investment anybody can do is into yourself, but not just clinically. You know, a lot of dentists get focused really on the clinical aspects. You know, one of the, you know, moving on to the next point would be the biggest difficulty I found was managing a team when you take over a practice. That is something you are not taught when you're a dentist. You know, when you got a team coming at you with HR issues and, you know, when can I take my holidays and, you know, payroll and whatever it is, you know, managing those and difficult conversations.
HR's tricky for sure.
You did not get taught that, you know, as an associate. So communication skills, you know, whatever that is, go and learn that. That is fundamental. You know, how to manage people.
And you're right, because, you know, all your patients are people. All your team members are people. So actually you're in the people business, and not knowing how to manage people in an efficient manner, but also motivate them, inspire them on a daily basis, all these things. And when you see it done and done well, it's really impressive. But when you don't have that in your armory, you know, you need to kind of learn it, and you have to work out which style suits you. It's
such a risk, isn't it? Yeah. Especially with HR, you know, you say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. Mm. Everybody knows their rights, and you've got a claim against you.
Yeah.
You know, it might be nothing to do with being malicious or whatever, but it's just the fact of you don't know what to say.
Mm.
So you say the wrong thing and then shoot yourself in the foot. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could tell you an example. So even one of my team members, I wasn't happy with their development after we had, you know, a lot of conversations, and I decided to take the decision to exit her from the business. When I had that conversation, and, you know, as a new practice owner, it's the first time I've ever had this conversation. And, you know, I sat down, explained all my reasonings, the good, the bad, how things have gone and how I think things should move going forwards. And she actually replied to me, "Oh, do you remember though when you were making these comments about me?" And started fabricating, you know, things that weren't true. And, you know, as a new practice owner, not having had this conversation before, you know, with anyone, I had to do anything like this, it was like, wow. Yeah, that was a big lesson.
So everybody knows their rights.
Yes.
And I think that's the thing, is you need to have good advice. And quite often, I mean, we used to have an interest in a law firm with, and Sarah is brilliant at HR.
Yes.
And she used to say to us, you need to have conversations with the specialists before you have the conversations with the people. She said, because quite often what will happen is you'll say something, won't you, as a principal or whatever, not really realizing, because you think it's like a normal conversation. It's a,
yeah.
It's really tricky.
But what you say there, Bobby, whether it's, you know, someone's being removed from the business through poor performance or possibly redundancy, depending on the situation. We worked with a guy years ago, and he gave us a really good line. And for anybody that might be having to go through this situation at some point, he always said at the start of the meeting, you say, "I'm sorry, it's not good news." And that as a line sets the tone for the meeting, because there's nothing worse than starting the meeting and chatting about the weekend and what they're doing and they might be looking forward to a holiday, and then somehow you've got to turn that meeting round to a conversation that results in them no longer working in the business. So the line, "I'm afraid it's not good news," sets a real marker for the tone of the conversation. And it's a really small thing, but it does position it.
Sets the dial, doesn't it?
Yeah, incredibly well, because you're right. You know, once you've been in business for a few years, you go through it a few times and it never gets easier. You know, invariably the person does get upset, but that is part of the thing you need to do to move your business forward. You need the best possible people. And the hope is they're happy somewhere else. It just didn't work in your business.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I would go as far as to say dentistry is, you know, probably an 80% people business and only a 20% clinical business. You know, it's exactly like you said, patients, your team around you. It's all relationships,
communication, isn't it? Yeah.
And how you make people feel, you know, that overrides, you know, the clinical aspect of dentistry massively.
Yeah. So as a result of your experience of what you've been through, you're now extending that out and offering help to other dentists that are looking to kind of go down the same path as you. But I guess what you're trying to do is, there's a phrase that we often quote, which is learn from your mistakes. What you're really saying is, no, don't do that. Learn from my mistakes. You're going to make your own mistakes, but I'll get you there quicker.
Yeah, I'll give you a set of ones that you can avoid.
I'm sure.
Or recognise, isn't it? I think sometimes you don't recognise you've made a mistake until you've made it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So what does that look like? How do you help other dentists thinking about doing this themselves?
Yeah. So, I mean, this all came around by accident. So after I set up the practice, I started sharing stuff on socials. A lot of dentists started reaching out, asking for advice on how to do stuff. And what I realized was that most people were just making the same mistakes that I was making. A lot of them were just wasting an incredible amount of money. You know, which was one of the biggest things. I hate seeing, you know, people getting ripped off or, you know, spending far too much than what they need to be. So then I decided to turn it into a proper program. So we did a test run and I thought, I'll see how it goes. Took a group of dentists and mentored them. We ran live webinars. Could just go through all the stages of opening up a practice, how it all worked, all the way from the beginning, you know, talking about your finding out your why, you know, a lot of stuff about clinic, having a real understanding of, you know, what you're about to do, all the way through to opening. So covering building, planning, regulations, whatever it is. And then we have a day in person. So everybody gets to come. We all get to meet each other. We have a full day of teaching and then we get to come to the practice and everybody can see the practice and see how it was built. And then going forwards, we're just rolling that through. So we've got an online platform where you can access all that education. And then we're building a really nice a group of squat owners, basically. So we've got our own community now. And there's a lot more we can do with that now going forwards.
And do you find when you've had the sort of the initial guys, have there been guys that have dropped out either through it or at the end of it have said, no, this isn't for me, I'm not going to do it? Or has everyone been positive?
No, everybody's been pretty positive. There's been a couple who have done it and then decided, you know, squat's not for me.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But it's great because they recognise that, you know, before they, you know, spend the money and go out and do it. And
I think that's brilliant. I think that is absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
I think that's a massive positive that they've gone through the process and said, right, I still would like to own a practice, but I know that I need to buy a practice. I'm not going to be able to set up. Or they may get to a point where they're like, actually, now I really understand what it involves to own and run a business. I'm very happy being an associate.
I'm an associate.
I'll turn up, I'll do my dentistry, and then I'll go home, which is also fine.
Or they realise it's better than the practice.
Courses for courses.
Exactly.
It's brilliant.
If you did this again, do you think it would be easier and quicker, or do you think it would be harder given all that you know?
Setting up another practice? Much easier. much easier. There's an incredible amount of knowledge and insight that I've got now through the community, you know, contacts, networks that we've built up. And I actually can't wait to do it again.
You've answered my next question. So is there another one coming at some point?
Yeah, there is definitely on the cards. So not immediately, but it is something that's going to be, about to be.
I think it makes so much sense because so many people only ever set up one squat, but all that learning, they effectively never get to apply again, isn't it? Because all the hard work and those things you just don't know the answers to, you get the answer to set up one practice. And for many, that's it. But it there is something that's a little bit of a shame about that learning never being used
That's why the dissemination through the webinars is good, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Well, you're sharing the magic fairy dust.
Well, I think Midday Ojo, who he's got his startup dentistry group, and he had a practice in Twickenham, and I think he's just opened his second practice. Mm. And that was kind of behind yeah. that. It was like, you know, I've learned so much. And interestingly, I think he found his second one really hard for different reasons. I think there were builders and all sorts. And it's just funny how... You think having gone through it once, the second one's going to be a breeze. Mm. I think sometimes it just presents different issues
yeah.
as opposed to it being the same
it must
as the
be
first one.
Because there's different compositions of each one, as you say.
Yeah.
Builders, planning in yeah. your case, you know. Probably next one, planning won't be such a pain in the ass.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, I did have a yeah. chat with Midday recently and he was telling me about his yeah. experience, you know, with the second squat. And yeah, it's really fascinating because, you know, in my head, I assumed that it would be a lot easier having, you know, the yeah. knowledge and the insight that you have, but you don't know ultimately until you do it, but you got to do it. You got to try. If you don't do it, you know, it's better than doing nothing.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, whilst it's relatively early days for you in terms of only a practice, sort of, you know, coming up for a year, what are the hard truths of owning a practice that perhaps associates wouldn't understand? Because we talk to lots of people that have an ambition to own a practice, but what are the things sitting in your shoes that associates perhaps don't necessarily understand that you see now you are a practice owner in your own right?
Yeah, I think the first thing is it's not a 9-to-5. it requires yeah. hours. You've got to put the hours in. You know, and that will impact on all aspects of your life, your family life, you know, your social life, whatever it is. You know, it's not as straightforward as, you know, being an associate and just disappearing and then having nothing else to worry about. You know, that's one of the biggest things. I think the second thing is that the work effort required on the whole, you know, is a lot more than as an associate because, you know, there's so much more you've got to learn and you've got to learn all that in a relatively, you know, short space of time. If you want to be successful. So yeah, those are the two biggest things.
Do you feel an increased burden of responsibility for having the responsibility yeah. of paying the wages of your team and growing your business?
Yeah, the way I view it is it's like an extension of my family. So I have my family to look after, but now I have my practice and that is basically like another family. So I have to look after my team in that practice. But not just my team, my patients, and all of that is an extension of me, and that is all my responsibility now. You know, that all hangs on my head, and I have to do whatever I can to make it work to support those people because they give everything, you know, to me. Mm. So why shouldn't I, you know, be the best?
Some of those responsibilities can hang quite heavy. Do you have the ability to switch off from that when you step away from the practice? Can you kind of lock the door and leave that in the practice?
I think once you become a practice owner, you don't really leave anything in the practice. I think everything goes with you yeah. to some extent. You know, there's always something running through your mind. But you know, I do try and switch off the best I can. When we have family time, you know, you just turn your phone off, put it away, and you know, you be that person at that point in time. But overall, you know, that responsibility sits with you, you know, yeah. pretty much all the time.
And is that getting as each month goes by, do you feel you have more time away from the practice, more time with your family, more time? Is it kind of a curve that's slowly coming back to a degree of normality? Because full on, setting up a new business is full on. You know, when you open the doors, those first few months of just finessing the process, seeing the patients, you know, it is. Are you starting to get to that point where you can step back and enjoy life a bit more?
So if I didn't have this other business help another dentist, then I would say yes, it would have. But I've actually made myself more busy than this. Yeah, yeah. starting two businesses in two startups in 1 year, you know, takes up a lot of time. But yeah, it's a challenge. But it's fine. You know, my family are very happy. You know, for the reason that they see the development yeah. within myself, and you know, it's one of those things. They see that I love what I do, and that rubs off on them. So the time that we have is quality time, and I'm happy. you know, it would be worse if I was doing all this and I was miserable, and then I go home and I'm miserable, you know, with my family and my friends. But because I love it, you know, the time that I have with my family, you know, I'm happy. That's good.
Yeah, which is fabulous.
Excellent.
Bobby, we always wrap up with the same two questions. Your first question is, you're a fly on the wall. Where are you going to be? Who's there? What are you looking down on?
Oh, yeah. I would actually want to be a fly on a wall in the conversation that my old principal had when he saw the practices. Ah. What those conversations were, I've never actually asked him, but that would be great to go back and actually have that insight into what led to that.
Yeah,
in the first
yeah.
place.
Well, you're going to be there one day.
Yeah,
aren't you? It won't be anytime soon, but there will be a day when you'll need to make that decision. And I think for people that are quite early on in the process, like you, you know, the practice has only been open a year. That's quite hard to get your head around. But the truth of the reality is, at some point you will need to have that conversation, and you will need to sell the business. And we always say to people, preparing your business for sale and selling it are two completely different things, but you should always have one eye on making sure that your business is in good shape for sale, because, you know, all things being equal, it won't be for many years, but should something change in your situation, at least you then have the ability to take that action if you need to. So, yeah, that will be a very interesting conversation.
Definitely.
And if you got the opportunity to sit down with somebody and have a coffee, glass of wine, beer, whatever your drink of choice is, who would you take the opportunity to sit down and have a chat to?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
It would be. Why Arnold?
I love Arnold. You know, his life story, you know, what he's done, what he's achieved, you know, where he came from, the discipline, you know, that he has, his mindset.
Have you seen the phenomenal Netflix documentary, the three-parter? Yeah.
I have. Yeah, I've seen that. I've read his books.
Have you seen Instagram? Yeah, what's that one that Mill had, the singing dentist, Brian Monarch? Seen Brian Monarch on Instagram? Yeah. So you should have a look, because basically this, I think he's a comedian, is he? Mm. But he basically puts Arnie into various films. So Arnie was Julie Andrews in The Hills Are Alive. And it's really funny, because it looks like Arnie and he sings The Hills Are Alive in an Austrian accent.
Yeah, in the
style.
So
Brian Monarch, it's quite entertaining. It is very funny.
But he's a remarkable guy, because to dominate the world of bodybuilding and be Mr. Universe, and then to be the biggest name in Hollywood, and then go on and become the governor of California, you know, three completely different worlds, and to literally be at the top of his game.
And a terrible actor.
In each of them. But he also, shortly after arriving in America, he invested all his money in a property portfolio. He's an incredible guy, an incredible guy.
Yeah, and like if you read his book, like how he built that property portfolio, it's just mindset.
Definitely.
You know, his mindset was just incredible.
Yeah. Bobby, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you for your time today.
Brilliant.
It's been really good fun. And like I said, I think you wear it really well. You come across as somebody who's really relaxed, really enjoying it.
No wrinkles in that forehead.
Exactly. I'm sure if we turn the camera down, we'd see some feet under the table pedaling pretty hard, because you've got a lot going on, but you're doing it really well. And on behalf of all the people you help as well, you know, thank you, because you've been through this, and you're really being open and sharing what you know, so that other people can go on and have their success, which I think is terrific.
That's brilliant.
Thanks, Bobby.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.